listening to the Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Dr. Nina Show. I am your host, Dr. Nina Savelle Rocklin. I'm a psychoanalyst specializing in eating disorders, and I am here to help you break free from binging, body shame, guilt, and diets that don't work. I want you to wake up and think about your day, not your diet. And yes, it really is possible. If you'd like to join me today, the number is 323-203-0815. That's 323-203-0815. I would love to hear what is on your mind and what is weighing on you. Because when it comes to binge eating or any kind of emotional eating, the real problem is not food. The real problem is what is eating at you. And that's what we're here to explore. And I'm going to help you get to those root problem issues and find ways to resolve them. So today's topic is five ways to speak up for yourself and not worry about what other people think. And by the way, if you want to call in, don't worry about interrupting me. I can always go back to my topic. I'd rather hear from you. That's 323-203-0815. So many of us learn early in our lives that making other people happy is beneficial. Most children want the approval of their parents. They want the approval of their teachers, their peers, and that is completely natural. But when we learn to dismiss or ignore our own needs to meet the needs of other people, then it becomes problematic. So the good girl syndrome, you might have heard of the good girl syndrome or the good guy syndrome. It refers to a tendency to take care of other people at your own expense. And this means growing up with a fear of disappointing other people, not wanting to speak up in case other people are hurt or upset, needing to excel at sports, in school, being a perfectionist. And it means obeying rules to the letter and generally making other people more important than you. And by the way, this dynamic isn't always gender specific. I see Josh is posting a comment on Instagram. The notion of self-sacrifice applies to anyone who sacrifices themselves in order to make other people happy. There is a great popular meme that kind of says it all. Don't set yourself on fire to make other people warm. And I'm going to talk about how this is also can be a trauma response. But first, although it is natural to seek the approval of others, when it's taken too far, it hurts our self-esteem and it also contributes to binge eating or emotional eating. A lot of people who are people-pleasing don't allow themselves to recognize that they actually resent that. They don't want to put themselves second. They don't want to set themselves on fire to make other people warm, but that's too threatening a thought. So sometimes we binge on food to suppress the thought, to distract ourselves, to comfort ourselves, and then we get mad at ourselves for eating, for what we weigh, instead of focusing on, well, what's the real issue here? So if you're afraid to speak up because you're afraid of what other people might think, remember this. You learned this way of relating to the world. And if that is part of what is weighing on you, here's some good news. You can learn another way. We have what scientists call brain plasticity, which is a fancy way of saying we can learn new stuff. So we have to unlearn what we learn and learn a new way of being. So one way of, I'm going to give you five tips of how to deal with this fear of speaking up for yourself and worrying about what other people think. The first tip is learn. To say what you think. So if you're concerned with the opinions of others, you may have developed a habit of keeping your opinions to yourself. And one thing you can do is start giving your opinion on smaller issues, right? We don't want to just dive into the deep end of the pool and without knowing how to swim. First, you want to go into the shallow end, right? Go into the baby pool, get used to the water, get acclimated. I was just at the wonderful Monarch Beach resort. And when I first went into the ocean, it was like, oh my God, it's so cold. And then within minutes, hey, it was actually nice. And soon it felt warm. So I just got used to it. I got acclimated. Same thing emotionally. We can get used to a new way of being. So for example, here's something sort of benign. If you're asked what movie you'd like to see, what movie you'd like to see, don't say, oh, it doesn't matter to me. Whatever you want, right? That's people pleasing. Instead, give a specific and definitive answer. Say, you know, I don't like horror movies, but I'm happy to watch that thriller with you, or I'm happy to watch that comedy with you, or that romantic comedy, or whatever. You can, you know, start by testing out the waters and just saying something that you feel safe saying. Eventually, you'll be able to speak up for yourself more. You'll be able to speak your truth instead of hiding it, burying it, and then eventually stuffing it. Yes, diving into the deep end causes a lot of waves. We have to start small and gradually get used to the waters of this new way of being. I don't know how far I can take this analogy. Hey, Faces Up Uganda, they are here with me on Instagram. That is such a wonderful, wonderful charity. Check it out, Faces Up Uganda on Instagram. They do great, great work. And they've got cool stuff. I got some of their swag, their t-shirts, their bags, all for an amazingly good cause. So good to see you, Faces Up Uganda. Okay, then also focus. So that's first, start small. Second tip is focus on what you like about yourself. Now, this is really hard for a lot of people. One of the things that I do in my online groups is, well, we end the group. We start the group with a win, and we end the group with saying something that we appreciate about ourselves. And at first, it is really, really hard for new members to share a win or share something that they like about themselves. Why? Because we are so used to focusing on what we don't like about ourselves. Our physical selves, our personalities, our actions. We are so used to like tearing ourselves apart and picking on ourselves that it's hard to think of, well, actually, I like this about myself. I appreciate that about myself. I really like that I'm tenacious, or hey, I really like my sparkly smile, or hey, I really like that I'm smart. These are the things that people can get used to doing. The more you do it, the easier it gets. Same with wins. We often focus on perceived failures or actual failures, and then we feel like a failure. Instead of, hey, yeah, this didn't go so well, but this I did really well. I feel really good about this. I spoke up. I set a boundary. I said no. The more that you focus on those things, the easier it gets. So focus on a daily win, which is something you feel good about. Something you feel good about. And that could be an accomplishment, a boundary you set. Maybe you said no. Maybe you said yes to something you don't normally say yes to. Just focus on something that makes you feel good about you and appreciate yourself. Because when you approve of you, guess what? You are far more likely to be okay with whatever someone else might think of us. You don't need so much approval from others when you are giving yourself your own approval. And it will be easier to be authentic and speak up. So a couple of Instagram comments, am I smart? Well, you will be the best judge of that, but so often we define smart in strange ways. Smart is the way you think. I've had people who have like PhDs in literature, but they don't feel smart because they don't have a math brain and they don't know how to, you know, one woman said, I have a PhD in literature, but I literally count numbers on my hands, so I'm not smart. No, you're smart in a certain way and you don't have a math brain. And also, some of us confuse knowledge with intelligence. Knowledge, that's the stuff that you know that you learn. Intelligence is the way you think and how you put things together. And there's also emotional intelligence. How do you respond to other people? Do you have empathy? Can you pick up on other people's feelings and thoughts? Those are also different kinds of forms of intelligence. So if you ask yourself, am I smart? How are you defining smart? Because if your definition is too narrow, if your definition is too narrow, then you're not going to feel smart. You're going to focus, like the woman with the PhD, focused on the fact that she had to add things with her fingers. You know, let's widen the definition. Maybe change even the sentence from am I smart to I am smart. How about that? How does that feel? Okay. Third tip, remind yourself of this. It is impossible to make everyone happy. It's impossible to make everyone happy. We just can't do it. It is not possible. So no matter what you do or don't do, no matter what you think, no matter what you say, there will always be someone who doesn't agree. Something else to keep in mind is that when we try to please everyone, we tend to be less respected. When we try to be all things to all people, people don't respect us. So we tend, as a culture, we tend to admire confident people. And confident people usually trust themselves and aren't afraid to speak up. So remember, it is impossible to make everyone else happy. You've got to be true to yourself. Josh is saying it can go the other way around. We can seek attention because of something going on. Yes, that is true, Josh. Okay. Fourth tip is give up the idea of perfectionism. Give up the idea of the perfect workout, the perfect body, the perfect life, the perfect meal, the perfect anything. Do not use perfect as an adjective. One thing that I hear a lot of people say is they replay conversations they've had after they have had it. So they'll have a conversation and then they'll think back over that conversation and really tear it apart. Oh, I should have said that. I shouldn't have said that. Oh, it was too much here. Oh, I said this I overlooked this point, or I should have, would have, could have, right? Replaying the conversation. And then thinking that other people judge them for not being perfect, not having the perfect thing to say. Well, we all occasionally say things that are wrong or clumsy or just stupid. We all do. We all sometimes do it. So think about this. Consider whether you judge other people harshly over minor misstatements or imperfections in what they said or how they said it. Do you judge people harshly? Chances are you are much more benign to other people than you imagine others are to you. Maybe other people are less critical and judgmental than you imagine. How does this relate to binge eating? Well, when we are judging ourselves or thinking that we're being judged, when we're critical to ourselves or imagine that we're being criticized, we feel terrible. We feel bad. And if you don't then have a way of supporting yourself, comforting yourself, reassuring yourself, and making yourself feel better with words, guess what? You're going to use food for that purpose. You're going to use food to distract, to comfort, to fill the void, because it's hard to feel gratified and satisfied with relationships with people, right? People, relationships fill us up. Like, look at our language. Relationships fill us up. You can't be filled up with a relationship if you're constantly worrying about what you said and how you said it. So you might use food to unconsciously, symbolically fill up. Next, set boundaries with unreasonable people without, this is important, without apology. When you start to speak up and not be so agreeable all the time, often at your own expense, we're often agreeable at our own expense. When you stop doing that, some people are not going to like that. They are not going to like that at all because they liked the you that set yourself on fire to keep them warm. So when you say, you know what, I'm not stepping into the flames today. No, thank you. No, they don't like that. They don't like that. They challenge you. They may tell you you're being too difficult, too emotional. They may try to pressure you to conceding to their wishes. The way to deal with people like that is to set a firm boundary. Say something along the lines of, that doesn't work for me. And by the way, notice that I did not say, I'm sorry, but that doesn't work for me. No, that doesn't work for me. No, I'm sorry. No apology. Or, I hear your input, but I'm happy with my decision. Clean, simple, firm, great boundary. And in time, people will learn to respect your boundaries and they will be more considerate of you instead of expecting you to always be considerate of them. So again, we all seek approval from time to time. But when the need for approval and the fear of causing waves causes a lot of anxiety, which again, we can turn to food or binging to relieve that anxiety, then if it is that intense in your life, then the need for approval is too extreme and it is detrimental to your self-esteem. When you speak up, when you set limits and practice self-care, life will be far more enjoyable. And when we have a far more enjoyable way of being in the world, when we feel free, when we're more relaxed, we don't need food for comfort, distraction, or for any other reason. So with a little practice, you really can free yourself from worrying about what other people think. And here's a bonus tip. I've even got a little prop. Look, it's my Darth Vader mug. Awesome, right? Okay, so two things to know about me. One, I am a huge Star Wars fanatic. Love Star Wars. The original Star Wars, by the way, help us, Obi-Wan Kenobi, you are only hope, that Star Wars. Just clarifying. I am also a fan of acronyms. So if you want a little help in terms of how to set boundaries with difficult people, here's one thing to remember. Jedi. Do not justify, explain, or defend the I. Don't justify, explain, or defend yourself when you're setting boundaries. That means no apology, no justification, no explanation. This is when you're talking to unreasonable people. When you are talking to reasonable people, then yes, you explain, you have a conversation. But when you're talking to someone who's unreasonable, Jedi is the key. Do not justify, explain, or defend the I. Just think about your inner lightsaber mentality, and it'll help you, I promise. So that is a great way to remember what not to say when you're trying to deal with unreasonable people. Okay, so I also have a couple of questions. Let me get to those. And by the way, if you're listening and you have any questions for me, you can always DM me through Instagram or email me or, you know, find me on Facebook and I will answer the question here. Okay, so Kristen is saying, I need solutions to the answer to the question, what would I be thinking about if I wasn't thinking about food? If I weren't thinking about food, I would be thinking about being upset that I don't know what to do to soothe and feel comforted at night. Okay. So there's a couple of things here. She doesn't know how to soothe herself, and this happens at night. One question I get a lot is, what's the deal with nighttime eating? In fact, my next book that I am writing is called How to Stop Eating, How to Stop Binging at Night. How to Stop Binging at Night. Okay. So here's the deal. During the day, we're often occupied. We're working. We're looking after kids. We're busy. We're doing stuff all the time. We've got our to-do list. We're checking it off. We're go, 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 go. We're doers. We're getting things done. We're focused on that. At night, kids go to bed. Work is done if you have kids. But generally, no matter what your life is like, at night, things calm down. And that's when your thoughts and your feelings may be more available to you. And when your thoughts are more available to you at night, things can get very uncomfortable. You might start feeling things you don't want to feel. You might start thinking things you don't want to think. You might start feeling lonely or sad or anxious, worried about the future. All kinds of things can start bubbling up at night. And so focusing on food is a way of resolving those feelings because you're distracting yourself from what you're feeling or what you could feel by going to the kitchen or the or a restaurant or whatever you're doing to distract yourself with food from what's going on inside. So that's why nighttime is a huge problem. But Kristen had a question of how, okay, so I know I need to soothe myself. Don't have a clue how to do that. That's not exactly how she put it, but I'm guessing that's how she feels. How the heck do I soothe myself when I'm upset? Look, here's the thing. We can't simultaneously be mean and judgmental to ourselves and supportive, comforting, and loving. We can't tear ourselves down and build ourselves up at the same time. So one thing that's really important is to challenge the critical voice and cultivate a kinder, more soothing, loving voice. So first of all, think about a friend. Think about a friend of yours, someone you care about deeply, right? Friend of yours, loved one, someone you really care about deeply. Now imagine that person is going through a difficult time. That person is upset. That person is anxious, worried, angry, whatever the, or all of the above, right? Going, having a range of intense feelings. Would you say, okay, I get it. You're totally upset. I see it. Look, I know just what to do. Okay, look, there's ice cream in the freezer. We can order pizza. I think there's chips in the pantry. I don't think so. I don't think that that is how you would respond to a friend in crisis or a friend who is going through something difficult. I think instead you would be helpful. You would be supportive. You would listen and you would be kind. So the idea is to treat yourself that way. But first, we have to identify that critic, which can be tricky. Recently, a patient in my private practice, she said she looked in the mirror and she said to herself, "You're disgusting. You're disgusting." So I asked her to repeat that in I language. I language, as in I'm disgusting. And she couldn't do it because she said it sounded too harsh. And that is exactly right. So one of the most important things that you can do when it comes to soothing yourself is to cultivate a kind voice from an I place. It's really easy for us to be mean to ourselves when we talk to ourselves in the second person you pronoun. Kristen, I see you have another question. I'm going to get to that in a second. If you ever say anything to yourself like, you're not good enough, you're going to fail, no one likes you, that is your inner critic talking. And it makes us feel bad, and then we just end up eating to escape our own mean voice. So instead, we want to take our own side and ask ourselves, hey, what's going on with me? What do I need right now? And tell yourself, I don't need to be perfect to be good enough. I like me. I'm good. I like these things about me. And really reassure yourself, because changing the way we talk to ourselves can be extremely powerful. And again, that means not just the words we say, but how we say things. Yes. So Kristen says those things after the binge. Instead of asking yourself that, instead of saying that to yourself, ask yourself this. What was that all about? What problem did that solve? What would I be thinking about if I were not binging? Did that comfort me? Did it soothe me? Did it distract me? Did it fill a void? Am I displacing anger from other parts of my life onto being mad at myself for binging with me? Reading the code to emotional eating means not focusing on what you're eating, but focusing on why. Why? So, Kristen, let me get back to your question. How about the racing thoughts surrounding food, focusing on food that's in the house with no voice? Actually, that is the voice. The racing thoughts surrounding food, that's a voice, but it's also a distraction. Remember that binge eating, any kind of emotional eating, is what I call a frenemy. It is a friend. It does something for you. It is doing something for you. It is distracting you, comforting you, filling a void, making you go into the numb zone, or as one person said it, I go into the dead zone, the binge zone, right? It takes you away from you. And that's what it's doing for you. But of course, it's also hurting you. So it's an enemy. It hurts your body. It hurts your self-esteem. It hurts your sense of self. But unless you figure out what it's doing for you, things won't change. If you only focus on food, you're going to stay trapped in the diet binge cycle. What is the diet binge cycle? Focusing on food. I'm going to eat this, but not that. Diets are always about some form of deprivation, and we want what we cannot have. So if you're focusing on what you're not allowing yourself to eat, then you've got food on your mind all day, and that takes the focus and puts it on what you're eating instead of what's eating at you. Diets only focus on what you're eating. They don't focus on why you're binging. And eventually we go off the diets. And then what? We feel bad, not just because we ate whatever forbidden foods there were, but we feel bad about ourselves. So now not only do you feel bad because you ate the thing that's not on the diet, and then that's usually followed by, I ate this, I've ruined the day, it's messed up anyway, I might as well have all the other things I can't have. So yeah, I had a couple of cookies. Well, now I'm going to have 10 cookies and the ice cream, and why not order pizza? And I'm going to have all the things I don't let myself have because I'm being bad. This is a path to disaster. And that's the diet binge cycle. Dieting is restricting, always leads to binging. So the key is to give up the idea of diet foods, good foods, bad foods. Kristen is saying, how do you fill the void other than food? How do you comfort yourself? I just want to cuddle at night. If you want to cuddle at night and there's no one there to cuddle with you, you have to cultivate a way of talking to yourself. And most people, when they try to talk to themselves, they say things like, oh, it, you know, it's okay. It's not that bad. I'll find someone. They try to encourage themselves. The mistake that they make is not recognizing, validating. You are not a grown adult baby woman, Kristen. You are a human being. We all want to cuddle. We all do. I just posted a picture of me and Zane the Dane, my 165-pound ginormous Great Dane who likes cuddling in my lap. His head is as big as my lap. And I posted how much he liked to cuddle with me. Well, I like to cuddle with him. We all want to cuddle. That's a human thing, not a baby thing. See how harsh you are to yourself, Kristen, and anyone who could relate to Kristen? So here's the mistake that most of us do is we say, oh, we look on the bright side. We try to be grateful. We try to positive think ourselves into feeling better. That does not work. No. So you know how I told you I love my acronyms? Okay, I got another acronym for you. So VARY is the acronym which helps you if you want to vary your response to yourself. And VARY is a way of comforting yourself with words instead of with food. So what does VARY stand for? How do you vary your response to yourself? You validate, acknowledge, and reassure yourself. And that means saying, hey, you know what? This is really hard. I want to cuddle and no one's here to cuddle. I'm lonely. I feel disconnected. Maybe I feel a little hopeless. This is really hard. It's really hard to be by myself, feel so alone, feel the ache of loneliness, the void of disconnection, to want so much to cuddle and be cuddled and be with someone. And I don't have anyone right now. That's hard. That's really hard. Okay, Kristen, so first you got to validate and acknowledge what is the problem. And then after that, you can say, hey, reassure. I am finding a new way of relating to myself. I am going to take steps to maybe meet someone who can do that for me, with me. Or I'm working to change my situation. Give yourself some hope. Be encouraging. But yeah, right now it's hard. That is the key to feeling comforted. You know, I have a friend who had a miscarriage, and all these people told her, oh yeah, that's bad. But you know what? You'll try again. You're young. You'll try again. You'll have that baby. It's okay. Like lots of people have miscarriages and end up having babies afterwards. Like I know someone who that happened to. Oh, you're going to have a baby, right? They're trying to be helpful, but guess what? They weren't being helpful. One person was helpful. One person said to her, you know what? This just sucks. You had a miscarriage. That sucks. I am so sorry. That actually made her feel better because she felt understood. Her pain was not getting brushed aside and she wasn't being told, but it'll be okay. Her pain was validated and acknowledged. That kind of talking does not make things worse. Josh, I'm sorry. It actually makes things better because when you say, hey, this is my truth. This is my reality. This is how painful it is. That's letting it out. And then you can express it and respond to it with VARY. When you just try to positive think it away, you ignore your truth. You ignore what's going on with you. And it doesn't go away. You can't stuff those feelings down. You can't positive think them away. You can't ignore them and you can't drop them. You can only validate, acknowledge, and reassure yourself and express them. That's why, like one of the things Kristen said was that she said she doesn't have a voice in her head other than what's going on with food. And that is true of so many of us. We get so adept at turning to food, we don't even know what's actually triggering us. We don't even know that something is bothering us. We think we're just focused on food. That's why so many people think they're food addicts. They don't know that something is going on within them that is leading them to want food. And that's why I developed my food mood formula secret. My food mood formula secret guide, which is available in my on my website, drninainc.com, but it's also available in my Instagram bio in the links there. How do you validate yourself when in pain and hurt? You validate the pain and the hurt. You say, of course I feel this way. Who wouldn't feel this way in this situation? Anyone in my situation would feel this way. And even if you think, well, no one in your situation would feel that way, you feel that way. I feel hurt and in pain because of this. Validating the pain and the hurt is exactly what you do. Say, yeah, this hurts. Of course it does. This is the situation. This is my response to it. Oh, ouch. It's hard. Yeah. And that sounds as if, to some people, it sounds as if you're actually going to make it worse. No, you're going to make it better. Like the person who had the miscarriage. She didn't feel like acknowledged and heard and recognized until someone else recognized her pain and said, God, that sucks, without giving her hope for the future. When someone actually said, yeah, that sucks, she felt better. And you, if you're a longtime listener, you've heard my story about me and my daughter and how she came to me with the skin knee. And she said, Mom, it hurts so much. It hurts. It hurts. And she's bleeding. And I did all the wrong things. And I said, oh, that's not so bad. Let's just put a Band-Aid on it. It's going to be okay. She said, but Mom, she's crying. It hurts. It really hurts. And I realized, oh my gosh, I'm doing the thing I tell everybody not to do. So I said, you know, you're right. Now that I look at it, it looks really painful. That looks like it hurts a lot. And that's when she stopped crying and she nodded and she's like, yes. And then she said, now can we put a Band-Aid on it? Okay. Now just translate that into emotional pain instead of physical pain. It is the same principle. The very same principle. So we're taught in our society to not feel painful things. We're taught that we're strong if we can ignore our feelings or positive think them away. And we're weak if we feel them. And that if we feel them, they're never going to stop. Actually, the opposite is true. It takes a lot of strength to feel painful, difficult feelings. And when we do, that's actually when they start dissipating. So this is a totally different paradigm than what you are used to. But the way that you've been doing it isn't working, is it? And it's not going to work. You have to find a different way of responding to you. Binging is a solution to the problem. It is not the problem. That is so important. I am going to repeat it again. Binging is a solution to the problem. It is not the problem. People say they have a food problem. They have a sugar problem. They've got a, you know, food addiction problem. They've got a binging problem. No. Binging is the solution to the problem. The problem is they don't know how to respond to themselves. They don't know how to feel hurt, sad, mad, anxious. Often with anxiety, especially, we sedate our bodies by eating a lot of carbs, and it just kind of has a sedative effect. That is a solution to the problem. The problem is anxiety. When you find new ways of being with yourself, when it comes to your experience, when you find new ways of responding to your anxiety, your anger, your loneliness, your emptiness, your fear, your sadness, your whatever is going on within you, when you find new ways of doing that, everything changes. This is why I don't believe in being in recovery from eating disorders. I do not believe in recovery. I believe in liberation. Recovery means you're always in recovery. I'm in recovery. It's perpetual. It's forever. It means you're always going to have to think about it. Hell no. That's terrible. That sounds dreadful. No one wants that. Who wants to be in recovery and thinking about this stuff forever? No. When I say at the beginning of the show, I say, I want you to wake up and think about your day, not your diet. It is possible to wake up and think about your day, not your diet. That's liberation. When you find new ways of responding to you as a human being, guess what? You don't need food for that purpose. And earlier I was talking about how the way we talk to ourselves is really important. One way that we can identify our inner critic, our inner judge, is when we recognize that we're talking to ourselves as you, as in you're disgusting rather than I'm disgusting. The other way that we can figure out a different way of responding to ourselves is the tone that we use. I've heard people say, well, let me give you one example. This person said, well, she tried talking to herself and it didn't work. Said she used all the right words, but it did not help at all. She's like, it didn't help at all. I tried talking to myself, didn't help. So I asked her to repeat exactly what she had said in the same way that she had said it. And I am going to demonstrate exactly how she talked to herself. Something was going on and she told herself, this is hard, but I'm going to get through it. I'll be okay. I can't imagine why she didn't feel better. Can you imagine saying that to a friend of yours who was upset? This is hard, but you're going to be okay. No. She sounded like she was at a funeral. You can actually say the same words in a different tone and they sound completely different. You can say, yeah, this is hard, but I'm going to get through it. I'll be okay. I'm going to be okay. A soothing tone can feel like a verbal hug. Josh is saying meditation might be a good practice at night. No. Meditation is not a good practice for people who don't know how to be with themselves. Unless you can do like a guided meditation or something like that, the point is that you've got to be able to be with yourself, with your thoughts, and with your feelings. Meditation often makes people feel worse about themselves because they try to meditate and it's too upsetting. They start thinking about stuff they don't want to think about. So meditation is good once you are able to recognize and respond, recognize what's going on within and respond differently. Just like intuitive eating it's a great practice, but it is impossible to practice intuitive eating until you have resolved or mostly resolved the emotional, psychological reasons for why you are turning to food. Okay. Another comment. How to avoid the disappointment and beatdown when you eat something? How do you avoid the disappointment and beatdown when you eat something? I personally struggle with an all or nothing approach. When I diet, I'm great. And then once I have something, I beat myself up for it. I feel like I failed and I binge. I'm the heaviest I've ever been. I feel like, how am I ever going to come out of this? Okay. Well, for one thing, stop dieting. Dieting sets you up. It sets up, as I was saying earlier, that good food, bad food mentality, which turns into good me, bad me. Oh, I was good because I ate the salad. Oh, now I've been bad. No, you haven't been bad. You just ate a piece of pizza, or you just ate some bread, or you just ate something with a carb. When you give yourself permission, and again, this is intuitive eating. It's hard to do. When you give yourself permission to eat whatever it is that you know, you are hungry for. And if you give yourself permission to have things that you think you're not supposed to have, you actually have choice and you end up having less of it. You can decide, do I want to eat it or do I not want to eat it? And then maybe I want some and maybe you don't finish it. When it's forbidden, we want what we cannot have. Then we feel guilty. We have all of it. And then we have everything else in the kitchen that we're not supposed to eat. So start by challenging the diet mentality, which just sets you up for failure. And secondly, beating yourself up is being judgmental and mean. Thoughts lead to feelings, lead to behavior. If you beat yourself up, you feel bad. You use food then to escape your own mean voice. So instead of beating yourself up, be curious. Be curious, not critical. Why did I eat that? Did I eat that because I'm so deprived and I can't have it and I finally just had to have it? Did I eat that because I'm feeling something? Do I need comfort? Am I lonely? Am I angry? Am I sad? What's going on with me? When you're curious, you're more likely to find the answers to the why. Also, get my food mood formula secret, because that will help you identify what it is that the hidden needs and feelings that you go to food so quickly, you bypass them. It will help you identify what it is that's really going on. And once you know that, you can express it and also comfort yourself with words, with the very approach. So beating yourself up is never a good idea. And then this idea of all or nothing, failure. You know? In between all or nothing is black and white. In between all and nothing is a whole rainbow of color. Can no longer say shades of gray, which is a good thing. Has a totally different connotation. I like color anyway. In between black and white is a world of color. You want to be interested in, okay, what's going on with me? I'm human. What am I feeling? What am I thinking? What is this all about? If I weren't focused on beating myself for eating, what, you know, what's eating at me? Treat yourself as a friend. If a friend said, oh, I ate the cookies. I'm such a failure. Would you say, yeah, you are. You are a total failure. I can't believe you ate the cookies. You suck. You failed. You're terrible. You're awful. You're never going to lose weight. You're awful. No, you can't imagine ever saying that to a friend. Never, ever, ever. But you can say what you might to yourself, what you might say to a friend, which is, hey, like, don't beat yourself up for eating the cookies. What were those cookies about? What was going on before you ate them? Are you eating them because you've been so deprived of cookies and you've been dieting and this is like the inevitable, you know, backlash? That's the word I'm looking for. Or is something going on emotionally? What were those cookies doing for you? Let's be interested. Let's be curious instead of critical. Talk to yourself as if you were talking to a friend. We're much nicer to our friends than we are to ourselves. And that is something that has to change. The key to stop binge eating forever, liberation, is not making peace with food. It's making peace with ourselves. It's learning a new way of identifying what's going on, responding to ourselves, validating, supporting, and encouraging ourselves so we don't use food symbolically for comfort, to fill a void, to express anger, to distract, to go numb, all the things that it does for us. Let's be curious. I like to say that I am a detective of the mind, right? I'm a detective of the mind. And detectives don't say, oh, that's a weird clue. It's a stupid clue. Detectives say, wow, that's a really interesting clue. Okay, now we know more. So be a detective of your own mind. Look for the clues. What's eating at you? And also, where did you learn this way of responding to yourself? Where's it from? Are you talking to yourself in second person or first person? Are you validating yourself? Are you positive thinking in a way, or are you actually honoring the truth of what you are feeling? So that's a lot to talk about. I will continue to talk about this every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific. Thank you so much for joining me. Remember, be a detective of your mind. Stay curious, not critical. Again, I'm here every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific on LA Talk Radio and Instagram. You can listen live then. You can also listen later on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get podcasts. Have a great week. I'll see you soon. Bye for now.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.